of legal and authorized organizations are taking political power into their hands. And so this is symbolic. It means that the struggle for improved conditions of living, the struggle for taking back political power, is going to go forward whether or not it is sanctioned by the traditional organizations that have been, that we have been lucky to have in place from time to time to do that work. And the fact that Haiti continues on a daily basis to struggle not just for the removal of Duvalier, but the removal of Duvalierism, suggests even there that the struggle, the continuing struggle, is being waged. And I draw your attention not only to Haiti, but even in the case, still in the Americas, in the case of places like Suriname, where we have seen some ups and downs and some advances and retrievals. It is in the context of this very summary worldview that we must locate the women's struggle. That we did not simply come on the agenda with the beginning of the decade, but in fact that the women's movement arose out of the recent upsurge arose out of this post-World War II arrangement, which on the one hand brought a decline in colonialism and therefore the unleashing of new energies, but on the other hand has sought to recolonialize, whether it is through the debt or whether through increased militarization or whether through the industrialized agenda. We have now seen that the movement is at a new historic stage, having to do battle with these new forces. And the decade, with its banner of peace, equality, and development, has brought together women across the world, face to face, for the first time in a dynamic interaction, which we had never experienced before. And those, in fact, a friend of mine, I was not so fortunate to go to Nairobi, but a friend of mine who lives in Baltimore, when she arrived there, she sent me a card. It was the first card I got from the movement, from the meeting, in which she said, "Desima, you and I, we will never be the same again after the decade, and certainly after Nairobi," because she had come face to face with two-thirds of humanity, the representation of two-thirds of humanity. And that is for us the font of our power, the font of our strength, the font of our hope, the font from which we will draw as we go forward. We have spoken about, or the media and our own research has suggested that there is a feminization of poverty, that there is a feminization of militarism, that women, in fact, are going to be the bearers of the crises that is unfolding in the world today, and we know that we are. May I speak very briefly about the feminization of militarism in the case of the Caribbean, which I think I know a little more about than most other places. In the Western Hemisphere, and we take the Caribbean to include places like Panama, where there are large black populations, for example, out of the turn of the century when Barbadians went to help build the canal, and places like Ecuador, even as and Costa Rica, and many places where there are black women there. In the Caribbean, there are some 41 military bases of the United States today, and this stretches between Panama, Puerto Rico, a small place called St. Croix, the U.S. Virgin Islands, and many places, Antigua, and so on. The case of the military presence in Puerto Rico has been sad on three counts. First of all, it has deprived the Puerto Rican people themselves of the national sovereignty. Secondly, it has been used to maintain the so-called southern flank, the southern command and the southern flank of the U.S. In its exercise of hegemony over the region, and it has been, in collaboration with the military base in Guantanamo, the ears and eyes and the alert spot for monitoring and subverting political struggle for political independence in the region. And the third use of the militarization of Puerto Rico in recent times has been first to serve as a base from which Grenada was invaded. And the corollary of that is to continue to be the headquarters for the militarization of the Eastern Caribbean region. A new report has just been issued called Boots, 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 which is the title of a calypso by a Barbadian fellow who opposed the role of Barbados in the militarization of the region in 1982 and the role that Barbados played in serving as a forward base for the invasion in 83. And Boots, Boots, Boots says that all over Barbados, and he was using Barbados in a metaphorical way, all we are seeing are the boots and boots of American soldiers. Well, what has happened since 1983, and we need not go into that record, but once the invasion of Grenada was culminated, the United States decided that that small isolated part of the Caribbean, better known as the Eastern Caribbean, had been effectively excluded from the post-World War II arrangements. So that most of you would not have heard about places like St. Kitts, St. Vincent. I think people only found out about a place called Dominica when they saw Mrs. Charles on the television that morning. These were 7, 8, 10 small countries. And it is Jamaica and the Bahamas and Cuba, Puerto Rico, Dominican Republic that, in fact, were predominantly integrated into the post-World War II arrangement, and most people knew about that. The rest of the region was left, the British maintained and still maintains a presence there, and the independence was given, and it was rather a low-keyed area of the world. Well, once there was revolution there in 1979 with the Grenada Revolution and several other developments, for example, the overthrow or the voting out of conservative regimes in St. Lucia and St. Vincent during that period after 79. The alarm was sounded, and the U.S., once it had effectively blunted the Grenada Revolution, analyzed that it was important now to take control of the whole region. And what has been unleashed in the last 3 years is a program of draconian militarization of the societies of that region. It's done on a rotating basis where the police are brought in for training, because most of these countries do not have an army, standing army, or any kind of military. And so they are drawn from the police, principally, and they are trained in paramilitary tactics. So that every of the small OECS countries, the one that Mrs. Charles headed up, the Organization of Eastern Caribbean Countries, St. Lucia, St. Vincent, Dominica, Antigua, Montserrat, names that are totally unfamiliar to the American public, names that go unheard of in the major media. These countries are becoming military outposts, because the struggle now is to rule by military force. Because we know that if left on our own, that the democratic process will lead to the overthrow of repressive regimes, and that has been happening. So now, the military presence is intended to intimidate and to recolonize the entire region. What's happening in Grenada as a result of that? Well, you know the record of the women's movement in Grenada. I see Sister Sophia Bendele here, who not only visited the Grenada Revolution and expressed solidarity in a very important and general sense, but became involved specifically in the women's movement, understanding its history and so on. And I notice you have an interview with a very a strong woman, Patsy Romain, in the folder. So let us take it that you already know that under the revolution, the women's movement assumed a place, a role for itself. And at the time of the coup, the internal coup, some people call it the implosion, the counter-revolution, at the time of that, and of course 5 days later, the invasion, the women's movement inside the country had reached a rather high point. At our first Congress in 1982, our survey found that 67% of the women of Grenada over 15 years belonged to the women's movement. 67%. And this was in addition to other traditional organizations like the Mothers Union or the Red Cross or other groups that were either purely women's organizations or dominated by them. For example, the teachers' trade union, as you can well imagine, was dominated by women and formed a strong progressive voice itself. So when the overthrow came, you found a highly mobilized, organized, and conscious group of women in the country. And this has been the target of the occupation program in the last 3 years. The first act was to declare the movement illegal, the NWO, National Women's Organization, and to do that by taking away its funds. So the budget was no more. We had a full Ministry of Women's Affairs, the second one in the entire Western Hemisphere. And that whole ministry was destaffed, depopulated. The women leaders who had been trained with such great pain and care were sent to do things that they were untrained for. Women who were lucky were given assignments in other ministries, for example, in housing or health or in construction. But it will be 3 years now, in a few days, that the invasion has occurred. And you will find that these women have been weeded out. So that all over the world, you can find the leaders of the women movement overseas in exile. In England, we have people in other Caribbean islands and so on. It has been effectively erased as they see it in an organizational form. But most of the women who continue to believe in the goals of not just our movement, but the women's movement worldwide, which include not just democracy, but improvement of their conditions and improvement of the broad social conditions, have not stopped working. In fact, they are organizing around the militarization question. And there are constant clashes in the country between what used to be they call the Caribbean peacekeeping force and youth. A lot of young men and women are not accepting the program of occupation, and it is a program of occupation. There is no gentle way to call it. Maybe history could be instructive. When the US Marines landed in the Dominican Republic in 1965, it was no question, or in Nicaragua in 1812. There was no question that what comes after is a program of the invading power. And to the extent that there has been an election in Grenada in 1984, means absolutely nothing. It is an election, in fact, if I give you the history, it is even more appalling, where it was a gunshot wedding. Eugenia Charles and Tom Adams summoned certain Grenadian political leaders to Union Island and said, this is it. If you don't get in, the only alternative is Gary or the leftists. So the political rule in the country is being done with the blessings of Washington. And therefore, the determination to stamp out organizations such as the women's movement, which has always been a threat to elite rule. Because women are, and we are no exceptions to that, are able to understand and articulate and to work for and to organize against injustice. And that has been the record in the region, whether it is through the Jamaican women's movement, whether it is in Grenada or where. And this is one area of a target by the new conservative political forces there. The situation in Grenada is not all that documented at the moment, and I issue an invitation to ICAO to undertake this kind of investigation. This is a moment in which I have realized that your citizenship as American citizens enable you and facilitate your work more so than those of us who have rights of citizenship in our own land. And therefore, if you are looking for projects of research about the status of women in this era after the decade, you may very well want to mount an investigative delegation to the Caribbean region, which is very close, and there's an untold erosion of the rights of women and children being unleashed there. Let me conclude by saying two things. I remember in the during the years of the National Women's Organization and the Grenada Revolution, we used to look to the year 2000. And it seemed sometimes when it was first broached, it seemed so far away. The year 2000 seemed like, well, I can't think about today, how can I think so far? But I suggest that we think about it, because if we do, we can work towards it. What is going to be the character or the legacy of our work in the year 2000? Where are we going to be? And what is it we have left behind that others can take up? So that as we review the record today, those of us who have been to Southern Africa, those of us who come from Nicaragua or Haiti or wherever, let us work with the sense that we are putting in place something for posterity. That it is not, as our detractors like to say, we have nothing better to do, or that a friend of mine, a man friend of mine from the Caribbean was here recently and we were discussing the women's movement in Trinidad and in general in the Caribbean. And he gave a very pert criticism. He said that the women's movement, as he had observed it, and this is somebody who sat on the board of one of the leading women's development organizations in the Caribbean. He said that the movement in the region is led by women, middle-class women, who don't really have any grievances because by and large they have jobs, they have good conditions, and they tend to articulate problems that they don't experience, and therefore they're representing working class women whom they are not. They're representing women whose experience they have not had. And this gives a warped view, and nobody in the country takes them seriously. And that really what it is that these women, he continued, are basically disenfranchised in a personal sense. And therefore they find the women's movement a little niche from which to agitate and seek revenge. I leave that one to you. Because while he provoked me, I would say that he provoked me in a positive way, in a critical way. If that is the case among the women's movement in the Caribbean, we've got to start to address it now before we continue representing causes of poverty, causes of injustice and inequality, which because we do not experience, we do not understand. And I'm not entirely sure that we do not experience them, but the point he was making, which I think is valid, is that the early phase of leadership in the women's movement, which did not come from the most disenfranchised sections, may not always be very clear and very linked to the issues and the causes and the women whom they represent. And I think this may be something for us to think about and examine what it is we are representing and who is representing what. What are the issues that we are legitimately taking and who, in fact, are we representing, which raises the whole issue of democracy in the movement. So as we go forward this week, let us not just speak among ourselves, the privileged few, I mean, not this week, but today. But let us suggest that as we gather, we've got a lot of outreach work to do, analytical work to do to realize the relevancy of the cause that we represent. The second thing I would like to say is the Caribbean Students Association at American University has had a weekend of activities which started yesterday. We had a Caribbean Scholars Dialogue on the question of integration. As you know, there is now a call in the region for political union over and above economic integration, which has been ongoing for some 13 years. And in the wake of the invasion and the stark polarization of political views, it is felt that this is a moment for political union. We have always maintained that we are one nation. We have the same history, we speak the same language, we are one nation of West Indians. But we need now, most of us think, one state. And that's an issue we have been talking about. And the second part of it is tonight we are having a dance for $2 with a steel band here from Trinidad and the food and so on. And we ask you to join us if you are still in town and are looking for some relaxation.
Can you give us the details on the dance? Where?
It is at American University. Student Center at 9 o'clock, 9 to 1.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We're not going to let Decima get away without the opportunity to ask her one or two questions. How does that sound to y'all? I think we had such a wonderful, inspiring presentation. I can't think of anybody in the city of Washington who could have more accurately portrayed what our mission here is today. We have to almost begin to understand the whole world in a glance. And Decima has really laid that out. I'm going to start off the questions, Decima, because you raised an interesting point. You spoke of the feminization of militarization. What impact in particular are the lives of, how are the women's lives in the Caribbean particularly impacted? In the Philippines, we hear about the huge prostitution rings and things that are attended to the military bases there. Could you elaborate a little on what you meant by that?
I should say what has already been obvious, that a lot of my own research now is not so much on women so much as it is broader. So forgive me if I'm not as specific. But in the case of the Caribbean, there are two things that is relevant. The first is that most of the so-called foreign aid to governments, even through the Caribbean Basin Initiative, these programs are intended for security reasons. And security is interpreted it's a collective or an encompassing term. So security means making sure that there are no political and ideological surprises. Therefore, if it is necessary to provide jobs to do that, we would do that. If it's necessary to provide military bases or to train an army. Therefore, the CBI, which was presented in the US as a big aid package for the region, trade and investment, the largest part of the CBI is military defense spending. Okay. In addition to that, when governments are spending more and more of the public funds on training military personnel, the resources for education, the social services, and so on, are minimized. In the case of the Eastern Caribbean countries, the unemployment figure stands in the area of 20 to 30%, depends on whose figure you want to take. I think the World Bank suggests that it is 20% on the average. But even some government ministers tell you it's higher. Now, out of 20 or 30% unemployment, the majority are youth and women. We know that from the record, because women tend to be those with the least skills, at least in the case of Grenada. When we were experiencing a national figure of 30% unemployment overall, it was over 60 for women. And they're the ones who were trained in the last 5 years and given a job that had to do with the creation of a new society. Now they're the ones who are unemployed. So with the reports we have had, is a major alcoholism among young men and women, because drinking rum is the same everywhere. You know, it's like drinking beer. The same alienation and depression. And also we have had a large, an increase in prostitution in 1984. I know those reports to be accurate. I don't know what has happened now that the very overt military, U.S. military presence and foreign military presence, Jamaicans and so on, have left the country. But that has been another avenue, another source of revenue. There's a third, and that is the use of drugs, hard drugs, cocaine. It has been on the increase. So that there are parallels. If you want to think about the Eastern Caribbean and what may be happening there, you just think of a typical inner city. Just, you know, really, I can't say how much the district represents. It really does. It's a large black population, a lot of young people, large machinery of bureaucratic and political elite, a professional class, and a large group of people who are just displaced and fend for themselves as they know best. And most of that is women. It's a little hard just to say women. It's the women and the youth, because the youth are very militant, very arrogant. They have heard about things like non-aligned movement and sovereignty and so on. They read a lot, and they are not prepared now just to sit and be recolonized. And if you notice in the Calypso world now, a large amount of Calypsos coming out of the Caribbean have to do with liberation. The majority, of course, having to do with Southern Africa. But also, for example, in the carnival in Grenada, there were about, I think we were told, there were 9 Calypsonians. Every single one of them sung about the Grenada Revolution. What is the state going to do about that?
Okay. I think we have time for one more question, if someone has a question, or we can move into our next program, part of the program.
Mrs. Charles and her political ideas and beliefs are part of the product of colonial policy in the Caribbean. I make myself clear. Those leaders arose, and indeed she is maybe a more obvious part of that heritage. When she played her role in the invasion of Grenada, the response was a lot of revulsion, But she is the prime minister of a country, and within the country, her opposition opposed the invasion and opposed her role and so on. She's no longer the head of the group of countries. This rotates and somebody else holds it now. But she has said recently that she is retiring from public office. And on the first anniversary of the invasion, October 25, 1984, just about that time, I don't know if you remember, 60 Minutes showed Mrs. Charles in a special segment called Mama. And I think it just means we have a lot of work in the Caribbean to do.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, last question.
Oh, certainly. We had started off this early, the program earlier, talking about the whole way that in countries where they don't have a large military, they use their local police to do the militarization. And we had talked about the way that that's happening in Kenya. Of course, we experienced that here in Washington, D.C., with 12 different types of police that can arrest you at any given minute. And depending on whether you're standing on one side of the street or the other, you're either committing a local offense or a federal one, so it could involve the FBI and all of that. So yes, we will be making those connections continuously throughout the entire conference. I think we should give Decima another hand right now. And thank her for coming, because we do, first of all, we need to brag on our own. We have absolute stars within the Black women's movement. We have absolute great people in the Black women's movement. I invite particularly the sisters who are coming from out of town to get in contact with ICON, see if you can bring Decima Williams to your city so that more of your people can hear these wonderful words that she has to share. Now I'd like to introduce you to the co-coordinator of ICON with me, Nikinji Ture, who's going to talk about a few schedule revisions, and then we're going to move immediately into our Nairobi slideshow, and that's why the screen is sitting up here. Nikinji?
Yeah, good morning. I'm going to make this real quick so we can stay on time. We're going to do the slideshow.